So before we start, just one script that I wanted to show you that may be useful, because we never know if we are going to get the time over it. So actually here I have my Assemble 4 that is running. This Assemble 4 is running into it's just running the usual way. So I have all of my process running. And one of the problems that we have with OpenChange when we want to debug something is, hey, how do I find the process where my OpenChange endpoint is running? So how can I find it? So obviously we can do the manual way, but if we want just to get very quickly, I've come up eventually at some point with just a script that lets you look at all the Assemble 4 process all the maps file, look for symbols, and finally instance GDB. So actually I can, because we can't really run OpenChange with in a single mode. I mean, there are some problems that we can discuss later. And so if I really want to get the setup in the way that it's deployed to customer, and I just want to reproduce the problem exactly the same way, and I want to attach to a living process, well, here's the way of doing that. And from that, then I can just, you know, continue my life, and that's all of it. So this one is for OpenChange, but basically if you just change the symbol line, you could be able to run it with whatever endpoint of Samba that you are looking for. Okay. So, beyond technical fulfillment. So we are going to talk about, quick presentation of OpenChange, what happened since the last Samba XP, what we have right now, and what are the potential and possible futures. So hey, this is me. My head belongs currently to Zentio, my heart to OpenChange, all of my members of body to free software, and my background comes from Epitech. So I've been running OpenChange for more than 10 years now, and it started like a student project, and now here it is. So what is OpenChange? So starting in 2004, that is a free software that is released under the GPL V3 or later. And the purpose is that we are providing a portable implementation of Microsoft Exchange Server protocols from the client side to the server side. So we are able to provide a similar Outlook clients feature, and we are able to provide Microsoft Exchange Server compatible server. And it runs as a plugin to Assemble 4. So you have Assemble 4 that is running as an Active Directory primary domain controller, and then you just launch OpenChange on top of it. And the main difference is that we don't require any plugin to run OpenChange, because we are implementing the native Exchange protocols. So about the interoperability and coverage. So we are supporting all the Outlook clients from 2003 to 2013 including. And when we are talking about the client side, we are able to get in touch and connect and work with Exchange 5.5 up to 2013, including all of the SBS version. The architecture. This is where, this one is a key point. As an entry point, we have Microsoft Outlook, any version that can talk over DC RPC, so MAPI RPC, or RPC over HTTP, HTTPS. So OpenChange is an endpoint inside Assemble 4. We can communicate with other Microsoft Exchange server. And when it comes to storage, we have a mechanism that is called MAPI Store, just like an abstraction glue. And whatever is within this abstraction glue, we are taking the MAPI knowledge, the semantics, and we are turning it into something generic. So any kind of backend can actually implement, we can plug into whatever system. So at the moment, the only real backend that is working and is providing all the set of features is the one provided by Sogo. So we are plugging into all their libraries. And it gives us access to MySQL when it comes to store all the contacts, the calendaring, and contacts, calendaring, and tasks. When it comes to email, everything is plugged into a regular IMAP server. So if you already have an infrastructure that is running PostFix, that is running DevCode, or is running XIM4 and Cyrus, then you don't have to change anything. It just works out of the box. And you can have all of the other clients that obviously can connect. There is this webmail and so on. So yesterday, what was yesterday? Well, yesterday was a nightmare. So if you want to set up OpenChange, you have all of these components that you need to set up, because OpenChange is just like a giant glue. So when we are talking about glue, then we need to take all the different pieces and get them to work together. So we have DevCode, we have PostFix, MySQL, Sogo, Assemble 4, all the dependency, DNS, Apache, when it comes to RPC over HTTPS, RPC proxy, so many components. So, well, what actually happened is that most of the people find it was so complex to set up that we're just like, oh my God. So a lot of people have tried to set up OpenChange over the years, and we were really friendly, really trying to help very, very hard. But actually a few succeeded. And when actually someone was succeeded, I mean, they were just like so happy. So they were claiming over the world, I have an OpenChange setup. But eventually that could have turned up just like a urban legend. So, you know, just like, I had this guy, he has been able to set up OpenChange. Oh, really? So we have tried to address this situation and some of the workarounds that we had. The first one was to provide virtual appliance. Just like, hey, this is the appliance. It's 1.4 gigabyte, no problem. I mean, if you have a slow connection, don't worry. Go to Starbucks, download it, take your coffee. And we are providing this virtualization image and it has this predefined environment so you can just test it. Problem is that it lacks flexibility and customization. So most of the people were just like, hey, we would like to turn that into our working environment. Well, guess what? That is not possible. The other approach was to say, okay, if you want to do that from the very beginning to the end, we have written this nice cookbook. So first, your cookbook is a step-by-step, so you need to get all of the Unix knowledge and sysadmin knowledge. 3 hours are required to set it up. I mean, from the very beginning, even for me, even with templates, 3 hours to get my complete working system. So that is not suitable for mass adoption. I mean, my mom, I can't tell my mom, okay, follow the cookbook. It just won't work. So a couple of months after Samba XP, we've been working with Zentiel to the integration of OpenChange into the infrastructure. So we have this nice web interface with all of the logic to enforce the infrastructure server to install all the components. And so we've been working on integrated OpenChange as a module. They have been integrated Samba 4 into the product since Alpha 18. So, I mean, they have this long experience with Samba, and so implemented OpenChange on top of it was just like a cherry pick on top of the cake. So it was easy to implement. And well, good thing is that we are able to leverage all this existing infrastructure. And obviously we have a bootstrap users, a potential target of 400,000, sorry. So the key point here is that we have been able to turn this 3 hours deployment into a 3 minutes deployment. So that was the first step. The first step in the big roadmap is, hey, let's try to get many users to be able to use OpenChange. And then we discovered something really strange, is that actually nobody knew about OpenChange. It's just like, oh my God, this exists. And actually we had people that just didn't believe it was working. Just like, what? It's working? We never heard of it? I mean, that's spectacular. So, well, welcome to the real world. We started to be tested like never before. And the more we got testing, the more we started to get bug reports like never before. And the classical bug reporting was not enough. So all just like fill a tracker ticket, start to describe your problem on the forums, send us email. Well, that was not enough. So we needed to address the situation more globally. So there is a chaining paradox to understand why we need this kind of thing, is that OpenChange is a DSO for Samba. SOGO is a DSO for OpenChange, and so if SOGO is a porting, then you have the cascade effect, and then Samba ends to crash. And if there is a problem in SOGO and SOGO actually crash, well, it caused Samba to die. So we have the user that say, hey, I have this problem, and OpenChange is crashing, or Samba is crashing. Well, guess what? We need to figure out where the problem comes from, because, I mean, that's unfair to say that the problem is in Samba if it's in SOGO, and it's unfair to say if it's in SOGO if it's in OpenChange. So to address this bug fixing plan, we have been working on three different layers. The first one is the final user, the one that matters. We have been implementing the uphold system provided by Ubuntu in a way that we can integrate that to the dashboard. And if there's a crash that happened, then the user on his dashboard interface just have to click a button and that sends a bug report directly into our server so we can inspect the crashes. The developer, I've shown you the debugging script, but extremely useful because every time that saves us 5 minutes, and 5 minutes plus 5 minutes, I mean, at the end of a year, that make a couple of days, and a couple of days is great if we can say that. And QA, so we've been working on manual testing, automated testing, and continuous integration, and that's improving over time. So about the port system, so we just added some before to the port list, and we have the submission button, and basically we have port retrace minus G, that lets you run the crash file. If we have time at the end of presentation, I'll just show you a demo about this one. The good thing is that it's extremely powerful because we don't need to ask anything about the user. I mean, we don't need to ask him what happened, why did it crash. We can just inspect the trust, inspect the stack trace, and see exactly what is the root cause of the problem. So we can address it globally. Problem is that in the system that we've implemented, we don't have any management of duplicates. So if you have 1,000 users that have the same problem and click on the button, then you have 1,000 bug reports. So it's extremely difficult to figure out, how to classify them. And we are in the junction. I mean, it's anonymous, so we don't really know who is submitting the crash reports, but at the same time, it's not personalized enough. So if we have somebody that say, hey, I have submitted this crash, this is my name, we have no way of figuring out who it is and maybe consider his problem in priority of if it's an important bug, we just kind of just like, okay, when did you submit the bug? And we look at the timestamp, so not really good. About the developer bug fixing, so a port is addressing everything that is post-process. So my process died, I want to just debug the memory and see what's going on. Now about live process analysis. So the single mode in OpenChange, I mean, running SAMBA4 in a single mode process is not working because we have, Sogo is doing LDAP reentrant call and we have just like a minor issue with the event loop, so we just like block. So when SAMBA, I mean, just like the, you know, the snake that is biting its tail, just like it waits indefinitely. So the only way that we have to do debugging is just to use the multifork model. And this is where we attach to the correct process before it crashes. So the debug OC, we just discussed it. Quality assurance. So it helps us doing obviously the early bug detection. We are eating our own dog food. It helps preventing great regression to anticipate all the problems we may have. And we are using two methodology. One is about automated testing and the other one is manual testing. Manual testing is the thing I like about it is that you never look what you were expecting in the first place. So you go to test something and oh, guess you have this side effect crash. So it's very valuable because of the entropy, but at the same time, we doesn't have to focus. The other one is about quality assurance with automated testing. So we've been working and implemented WinTest, so we have all of the environment set up to set up all of the different DC. So if, for example, the SAMBA team needs an infrastructure to run some of the WinTest, I mean, we can provide access so you can just bootstrap it. And we are also using it so we can test OpenChange. And all of the Outlook version to test them. I mean, Microsoft is providing the test suite that you run. I mean, you compile with Visual Studio. We took a different approach, which is just like we are mimicking the user behavior. So it actually runs Outlook, and then we are doing all of the interaction, just like if the user was running it. One drawback with this approach is that it's extremely slow. It's not reliable because it changed with the interface. And so maybe in the future, that is not something that we are going to continue, but we are going to move to something a little more low level. So today, what do we have? In a nutshell, we know what is working in OpenChange. More importantly, we know what is not working. So we can anticipate what are the user expectations, and we have a growing development team. Yeah, guess what? Development team where people can do C, very rare. So whenever we have a C developer, just like, come. In a nutshell too, we have new features. We have new design and architecture possibilities that was made possible because of the technology choice we have taken over the last years, and we have new processes and infrastructure. So let's cover the new features. First of all, we have the RPC over HTTP and HTTPS client library. So I've started to discuss with Matt. It's a work in progress. I hope that we can come back very soon and that it can be integrated into SAMBA 4. The point is, with this code, we can actually have OpenChange to access Office 365 and Exchange 2030 in the native way. So the only thing that changed is the transport layer. So it implements a transport layer. Another one that we have is to provision OpenChange as an additional Exchange server. So we can just select an existing organization if you have SAMBA that is running as a secondary, as an additional domain controller. And in this, the primary domain controller is already running Exchange. Then the schema is going to be replicated onto SAMBA 4. And then OpenChange can leverage this schema just to start being usable. And so it makes it possible to select OpenChange among the list of Exchange server because we register as an additional Exchange server. And it also let us select for other different mailboxes where we want the server to be located. Some of the drawbacks of this approach at the moment is that because we have different server and there is no server-to-server communication, it's just like sharing calendar is only going to work if you are on the same server. I mean, so users that are on the Exchange server are going to work one way. I mean, just like two isolated environments. So they are living together, but it's still a bit isolated. Another thing we've been working on is the new mail notification. That is something that is really a request from the user. It's just like, if I'm running OpenChain, if I'm running Outlook, every time I want to check my email, it doesn't work when I refresh. So I need to click Shift F9. I said, obviously you need to do that because OpenChain is a synchronous process. If we look at the architecture, what we've been doing is that actually OpenChain is just listening. So it's just in an event loop. And whenever you have an Outlook request, then we start to do the processing. But now, what happens if we have something that happens in DevCode? How do we notify OpenChain that a new message arrived? So this is where we started to implement something with RabbitMQ. There's an existing implementation that we developed a couple of years ago, but we reworked it now to get the new, this new system. So if you have DevCode, we have a plugin into that that is just going to trigger a notification, say, hey, a new message arrived. Then we have workers written in Python that are just taking this notification and say, okay, there's this new message, I'm going to register it in the system. And once they are finished to register it in the system, they just send to OpenChain and say, hey, we have registered a new message. You are free to tell the Outlook client that something just happened and that you can just get the new email. And in OpenChain, we are leveraging the idle loop from Outlook. So Outlook, to maintain the connection, just say empty packets or, you know, just like to keep the connection open. And so we are taking advantage of that just to fill the notification blobs in the end, and so that Outlook can start to do the job, so it received the notification. There's different mechanism of notification. 2003 was using EDP notification, so you need to send a UDP blob. So we had this working, but we have removed it. And actually, the 2007 and 2010, because we've been discussing with the Microsoft people, been really helpful. So we still have some work to do, but there's this Exchange async notification pipe that we need to work on, but it's in good shape. Another really cool thing, who is using Docker here? Nobody? So Docker is just like LXC container. So one of the things we've been doing is that we've been talking about this virtualization environment, and where virtualization is good, but to bootstrap an environment, it takes a lot of time. And we also have people that just want to test OpenChain out of a box. I mean, developers want to get an instant working system and don't want to just download Zintel using the specific build, which I can understand. I mean, why not? So in this case, we have been putting on GitHub all of the Docker script so we can bootstrap an environment that is going to get MySQL, MTA, Sogo, and the only thing that requires is on your local computer to run OpenChain and SemaFor. And just to set up the IP address in the virtual machine, I mean, in the script. And then it's going, MySQL is going to use the, MTA is going to use the authentication from Active Directory, and Sogo is going also to use everything from Active Directory. So we have all of these pieces that are working together in, it's very quick. And another big advantage of containers with regards to virtualization is that we can have commits. So basically, more than snapshots, it's just like, I've been working on something, I completed a task, just like, my script is updated or I have this new version, I just can commit and then I can just browse the history and select what is the commit I want to work from. So it also gives us stateful machine. New design and architecture, yes. Well, we have been working also in providing an OpenChain version in the cloud. The thing is that because of all the technology choice we've been taking, it's decomposable and it's ideal for orchestration. So we have different level of abstraction that we can use. One is at the RPC proxy. So RPC proxy is what takes the MAPI over HTTP, HTTPS connection, just remove the HTTP encapsulation, and then create a MAPI RPC connection to SemaFor OpenChain. Then we have SemaFor, and then we have this thing, just like if we want to get something in the cloud, we don't want to have only one single DC. I want to be able to get many OpenChain workers one next to the other and just do the processing. So I want my information, my AD information to be separated from processing. So separate process from data. And so we turn out to have SemaFor as a dummy DC. So it's provisioned with dummy information. And we are using external AD authentication. So we have a SemaFor, a real SemaFor AD somewhere else in the picture that has all the user, all the organizational unit, and all the workers are just querying and authenticating and doing the queries against this one. So in this case, the only work that this SUM/BEFORE node are doing is the open change processing. And we have MySQL for everything which is data storage but email at the moment. And where we have everything about our calendaring contacts. And so we can partition depending on what we want to do. So one other thing is multi-tenancy. So obviously SUM/BEFORE doesn't support multi-domain. So how do we do with multi-tenancy? Then well, we need to, at this moment, we need to run some hacks. And one of the hacks is to just leverage the organizational unit, so to create a sub-architecture. And everybody can just use the same infrastructure. And obviously all the thing about load balancing and scalability. About the infrastructure, we've been starting to do more and more unit tests. I mean, that was something that was critically lacking in OpenChange, and that helps maintaining the quality of code over time. So it's a very painful process to catch up with unit testing, but that's extremely valuable. And among of it, we have started to integrate with Travis CUI. So every commit, every pull request is just processed to Travis. So there's the automatic build, and we can just merge the pull request if the build has passed. So it also makes sure that we don't have to worry if it's going to compile. Nobody does have to test this manually. We can automate this. Okay, tomorrow, because tomorrow is important. So a work in progress. We've been talking about this support system. Let's say that I have 3 gigabytes of crash reports. How do I inspect that? I mean, do I just go into every crash report? It's not doable. So we need a data mining tool that is going to extract the stack trace directly out of a crash report so that a developer can just figure out where the problem comes from. And we also need, based on the code path, to detect where the problem comes from. Is it a problem that is related to the offline, to the cache mode? Is it a problem that is related to NSPI? Is it a problem related to SUM/BEFORE? We have some SUM/BEFORE crashes that we've been able to detect with that. So, well, we need to handle the duplicates. Another thing, more critically, is about the MapiStore Python backends. Developing a backend for OpenChange takes time, and C developers are very precious. So, if we want to develop a backend right now, it takes you several months before you really have something that is complete, reliable, production ready. Now, what I want is that anybody to be able to write a backend and in 2 or 3 days have the complete picture and to know whether they need to do work on their side or if there is something that I'm missing. So one of the way to do that is just like, because C is very, I mean, we don't have many people doing C and C is complicated for many people, just like take the Python approach. So I've started to write a C to Python gateway that just expose the backend in the Python way, and so you can have a backend that is just a Python script. And you can do whatever you want. You can query a remote web services. You can have something that is on file system. I mean, whatever you want, you can leverage all the existing API to go as quickly as possible. So obviously it's slower than a C backend because, we need to do all of this processing. But actually that's an acceptable compromise because guess what? Exchange is not real time. So speed doesn't really matter. I mean, that's not an issue. If we have 1 second delay, nobody will really care in the end. So with this Python approach, we are able, I mean, we can develop way quicker. And if we get something that really matches the needs, then, and if speed is not a compromise, then yes, next we can consider developing a C implementation. So it's just like step by step. It's completely suitable for POC, and that is presumably completely suitable for some of the development and to get a growing development team. So still, this Python backend approach, it has only one problem, is that, you remember the Cascade chain, if I have a crash, everything is crashing. So how can I prevent my server from crashing? Then maybe I can just separate all the different instances. And instead of getting my backends load at DSO, maybe my backends can just be queried just like to a web service. And maybe I can have a remote web service that is running all my backends. And so what would stay is just a communication protocol between the OpenChange server and the external platform that is running the backend. So it also suits more modern object store model. Okay, possibilities, public folders. This is something we are lacking at the moment. So we don't have public folder support. I mean, we do MLA public folder for FreeBSD, for legacy Outlook version that are querying FreeBSD directly into public folders. But you can share documents, you can share a calendar or contacts for or contacts just with public folder in OpenChange right now. So we have different ways to address the situation. One is maybe we can have a CIFS backend. I mean, that would make sense. We are within Samba. So hey, I mean, if I can just like upload, I mean, all of my calendar or ICS files stored into a CIFS storage backend, then I can access them directly from my shares. I mean, it's an all-in-one. I can also have all of the advanced ACLs and I get a unified storage. Another approach is, for example, with the Zentool Cloud, there's this revision history. So one of the reasons why public folders was killed or eventually got killed and then got to live again is that there were no revision history, so it's not suitable, it's not a space that is suitable for data storage, but companies are using it. So at some point, if you can just abstract this information of revision history, point in time recovery, put it into something different while still getting Outlook to access the information, then you are making millions of users happy in the world. So it's something that we consider. Also, the support of Exchange Web Services. At the moment, we are supporting free EWS services, so auto discovery, because that's a requirement, free busy, and also out of office. So are we going to implement some more? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe we are going to take our time. Maybe we are going to do it in a way that matters and makes things possible and that we can have a very sane relationship and we can move forward very quickly. So I don't know. But something that I know is that we've been talking about, for several years, OpenChange is using PIDL. And PIDL is the core of the architecture when it comes to generate all the stubs, I mean, all the MapiROP stubs. But the problem is that all these stubs, they are not in-dir encoded, and it's not a stateless machine. It's a stateful machine, which means that some of the idea somewhere in the code depends on the value you pass once you open the mailbox. And that is something you can't do at the NDR level because you are too low. So that was the first thing. It's just like NDR is not suitable. I mean, PIDL is not suitable to do that. The other thing is that we are always doing this by looking at the specification. And so when a specification is changing, how do we know that the ROPS is changing? Or there's a call that we don't support, or there's this error code we don't support. So this MapiROPS compiler, actually, I'm going to show you what this compiler looks like. I mean, what it's actually processing. So instead of a UID, the idea is to take directly the specification. So this one is very old. I mean, I didn't touch this code for the last 2 years because I created it, and at some point I say, okay, I let it in a corner. It's going to be useful at some point. And actually, today it starts to be probably something the most useful that we can have in the foreseeable future. So actually, the idea here is to get as close as possible to the Microsoft Open specifications. So to leverage the document and just say, we have an IDL that match this specific open specification, this specific version. So we are just using the version. We can have something that really depends on, we can split instead of having everything into one IDL to do everything per OX specification. And we try to mimic a bit PIDL, I mean, some way, because if we need to rewrite all the IDL, it's going to be a huge amount of time. So at least let's try to make our life a little less painful and try to take what is good in PIDL so that we can just reuse it. So what is not NDR encoded is basically that there is no alignment. So everything is just put one next to the other. So we don't need to care about this. We don't have these considerations. Another thing is that we have nested structure. So we can have an infinite buffer, a recursive buffer. And that was causing some trouble with PIDL. So we had to introduce some hack, just like we have this buffer and this buffer we cast it, so we just abstract it from NDR. It doesn't make sense. And actually something that is really useful here is that this is probably one of the most useful things, is that when we have a rope, we need to return some error values. And actually, how do we get sure that from the implementation's perspective that we are implementing the correct return value? Then hey, let's just specify it. So if my return value is not part of this one, then it probably means that I have a problem somewhere, but it's not protocol, it's not a problem in the protocol, it's a problem in the client side. And that also helps just like to, because this compiler can generate some unit testing. So out of it, I generate a buffer. I mean, it's just a buffer, a big buffer that generates a MAPI payload. And this payload, we can put it in over RPC, we can put it over HTTP, we can send it directly if it's required. So we don't need to care about the transport mechanism. And that helps really just like doing the unit testing automatically, writing all of the code, and well, so it's very primary actually. It's written with a pparser. It's just like 300 lines of code that generates all of this idea and generate the all of the code to create the buffer and do the unit testing. So it's something that I need to push on GitHub very quickly so we can, you know, move forward with it. But it's potentially a very promising approach here. And and actually that was my last slide. So slide from current slide. So are there any questions?
Do you have documentation on the compiler?
Well, for the moment, the documentation is the code. But yeah, I mean, I started also to write the specification about the of the compiler, but it's a real work in progress. So we need probably to rehash everything, so.
Okay, talk to me. I've got a couple of years of compiler design behind me, so.
Oh, your help would be greatly valuable.
Any more questions?
Just wondering, have you made any performance tests? So how well does it scale? Is it able to run with 100, 1,000 users or 10 users on a node?
Okay, so if you look at how much SemaFore scales, then you have the answer for OpenChange. I mean, we are using the exact same architecture. So from this point of view, there's no problem. And from the backend is not a blocker. So you have to look at two endpoints. The first one is what SemaFore is providing, probably not a problem to scale. The other one is what the backend is providing. This is probably where potentially the problem can come from if the integration is not perfect. At the moment, we start to get some clients that are deploying it. We have seats which are deploying with 200 or 300 seats. We have bigger customers that are coming in the pipe. So future will tell, I mean, how it scales on larger scale. But as for larger customer, we're using a cloud approach. So we can just scale the number of nodes depending on the processing that we require. And for small business server, we are targeting seats that are under 300 seats, 300 user. So 300 user, you can just like use a single instance. If it's more, it can probably work, but I mean, we don't put any guarantee in that. So it's just like more. If you want something more, just use just like a decomposable architecture, it will probably suit more units.
So you have from nodes to nodes communication?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's, yeah, exactly. That's the communication. I mean, you need to take it at the global scale. So it's not only depend. I mean, OpenChange is some glue. I mean, we're just like a proxy. I mean, a proxy that helps any potential groupware provider to have a MAPI compatible layer. So, I mean, you guys, you could be using it. I mean, anyone can using. I mean, there's no problem with that. And we are not looking to get into this business of developing the core groupware. But it doesn't, I mean, that's not our purpose. Our purpose is to implement the stack, I mean, the MAPI stack and all the protocol and do the magic there. So.
What if I don't believe you and I want to test? Do we have a scaling test?
Okay, a scaling test. So we have different things. If you want to test the orchestrable architecture, you have free demo. If you want to run it on your own and just see if what I'm saying is true, you can download Zentral server on www.zentral.org. There's this nice documentation so you can run it very quickly. And you have Docker too.
Stress test.
Okay. Basically, can you please pimp your stress tester?
Yes, we do have a tool that lasts from 2010 and it's called OpenChange Sim. And actually let you simulate behavior of thousands of Outlook clients. So let's say that you're on a single machine, we can generate all of the interface, I mean, virtual interface that are going to run their own IP address, and we can run on each of these interface different scenarios just to generate entropy with a different number of users. So everything is, you can have 1,000 users that are testing over 10,000 IP addresses and that are simulating connection to Exchange 2003, 2007, 2010. So yeah, we do have this tool. It's all on the repository, so the documentation is there. So here it is. Does that answer your question?
Basically, you've got this thing. You should be flapping it everywhere.
Yeah.
So I'm not the deep technical guy, but I'm interested in that. So the protocol approach that you have, is that OpenChange product already really usable for productive enterprise users?
Can you repeat the question?
A tree introducer enterprise company, can they work with OpenChange already? Or when will they be able to work with that as a total exchange replacement?
Absolutely. I mean, you can just take it, test it, and run it.
Okay, with all that that Outlook versions that you showed?
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Okay, and how many full-time developers do you have?
Okay, so we have two development teams. We have the OpenChange.org project, where we have a team where people come from Australia, come from France, that comes from Bulgaria and comes from Holland. And we also have the, because if we are talking about the enterprise level, then we are talking about a product. And then if you want to get a product, then you need to get a company that can back off the product. And so this is where Zentiel come into the picture. And we have a growing team. At the moment, there are four people that are working on OpenChange, but there are more coming and in different areas. So there are people that are working directly at the core problems, because we still do have some issue to fix. And there are people that are working in different areas, just like the Exchange Web Services, fixing some stuff, running the test suite, having the QA. So it's bottom to, I mean, it's the whole stack. So depending on what you're looking for, I mean, all the code is on openchange.org. So, I mean, there's nothing here in it. It's GPLv free. You just take it, you run it. If you're looking for professional service or something different, then we will gently orient you to Zentiel at this moment.
Okay, and for coming back to the enterprise customers, do you have any known company that's using it?
Yeah, we have the second largest French bank that I mean, we have a subsidiary of the second largest French bank that is running OpenChange as part of the infrastructure. So we have 300 seats that are running Outlook 2003, 2007, and 2010. And they are using all of the different features, would be the webmail, would be the Outlook, I mean, the MAPI connections, or would be even IMAP connections, depending. And so this is, I mean, that is the first deployment we have in, and we have more to come.
Okay, thanks.
Any more questions?